Good evening, everybody. We had been discussing the method of selecting judges in a situation where there isn't one established court in town. So just to review what we spoke about yesterday, if there is an established court in town, they have the right to call any legal action in front of them and to impose their jurisdictional authority. But let's say there isn't, right? Let's say some kind of a dispute came up in Teaneck and there isn't an official based in of Teaneck that everybody has subscribed to. So how would it work? So the Mishnah said, Zeh bover lo echad v'zeh bover lo echad, that each one of the litigants has a right to choose one of the three dayanim. And so how do you get to the third? That was a dispute between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. So Rabbi Meir said that the two litigants between themselves have to make a decision, and they'll choose the third judge in a mutually agreeable way. And the Chachamim said, no, that's already too partisan a process. And so the two judges that have been selected, each one by each litigant, will themselves choose the third one from between them. So that was the view of the Chachamim, and that becomes a normative ruling. Now, is there any appeal? Let's say the litigant chooses a judge that, again, we're not dealing with somebody here who's considered a mumcha, formally ordained, and an expert. So is there any appeals process by which one of the litigants can simply say, I don't accept the selection made by the other litigant? So Rabbi Meir says yes. Basically, one can object any fashion whatsoever. The Chachamim take the position that unless there's some clear, reasonable objection that he's a relation of one of the parties involved. You can't have that in halacha. You can't have somebody who's related to one of the litigants serve as the judge. That would be completely inappropriate and unethical. Or that there's some other psul, and we're going to talk about what the psulin would be today, what would invalidate somebody from serving as a judge or even as a witness. So the Chachamim take that position. And again, we rule in accordance with the Chachamim. So if I was in some kind of litigation against Isaac, and Isaac chose a judge who was, you know, not a relation of his and not in any way disqualified on his face, and I simply didn't like him or was trying to throw a wrench into the process, the Chachamim say, I cannot object for any unreasonable claim. And in secular contracts, one finds precisely the same construct, that well, there will be a clause called reasonability, that people can't act in an unreasonable way. They can object to things, but they have to be able to demonstrate what the basis of their objection is. And the same thing is true on the third level of the dispute, where Rabbi Meir took the position that one of the litigants can team up with some outside party and testify as a pair of witnesses against the witnesses brought by his interlocutor. So again, if I were in some kind of a court case with Isaac over here, and Isaac was adducing two sets of witnesses. So according to Rabbi Meir, I can team up with somebody and try to invalidate one of his sets of witnesses. And the Chachamim say, you can't do that. You're party to the case. When we talk about two witnesses testifying in the case, they have to be neutral parties. I can't sort of like testify on my own behalf in some kind of a pseudo-objective manner. So the Chachamim ruled against Rabbi Meir in that respect as well. And in all three of these areas, we followed the ruling of the Chachamim against Rabbi Meir. Okay, so any questions about that? That was the first Mishnah in the Perek. Now we're ready to go on to situations where you could have somebody who was a relation of one of the parties actually serve as a judge, a situation called Kiblu Alayhu, somebody who would be formally invalidated, but by mutual agreement, mutual consent, they could simply say, we accept him. Any questions so far? Okay, so we're ready to go to the second Mishnah, which deals with the principle of mutual consent, of Kiblu Alayhu. So Amar Lo, Ne'eman Alay Abba. So let's say my father. So normally, one's own father cannot serve as the judge, right? This is in preschool, right? You can't get your, say, my father's going to come and, you know, solve this, if you get into a fight with somebody at school. So it has to be an objective process. So Siggy had been asking yesterday, you know, what's the means of selecting the judges? So normally you wouldn't be able to select a relative. But if by mutual consent, you know, one of the parties says, Neman alai Abba, or Neman alai Avicha, or your father is perfectly acceptable, Dayan, from my point of view. Neman alai Shlosha Roei Bakar, there's a rabbinic injunction against people who were involved in grazing cattle, because many people who were involved in grazing cattle were also involved in financial improprieties. They would graze the cattle on ground that was not theirs by legal title. So Rabbi Meir Omer Yachalach Zorbo. Rabbi Meir says, in this situation of Kiblu Alayhu, where they accepted somebody who was a relation and therefore should be formally invalidated, Rabbi Meir says, one always has the right to say, you know what, that was a mistake. It really wasn't an ethical process. He was, after all, a relation of one of us. And that is the point of view of Rabbi Meir, that one always has the right to be chozer even after the Gemar Din, even after the Psak Din is given. The Chachamim say, you can be chozer, you can retract even as the court case is going on and say, you know what, this is a big mistake, I should have never agreed to this. But once the Psak Din is given, you have to accept it because you entered into arrangement. So just because the judgment, let's say, went against you, that's not grounds for being able to back out of the process altogether. Now, even Rabbi Meir will agree. Rabbi Meir, who says you can back out even after the Psak Din is given, he says that if there was a kinyan made, if you actually made some gesture or formal acquisition, he would concede to the position of the majority that one cannot back out prior to the Gemar Din being given. Okay, so that is one level of dispute. So let's say the ruling in the court case was, and this happens many times in halacha, that one of the parties in a financial dispute, before he can collect his money, he has to take an oath that he's really telling the truth. This is something that people try to avoid because the penalty for taking a false oath in halacha is very grave indeed. So if I was obligated to take a shvua, to take an oath, and Isaac had pity on me, and Isaac said, well, I'm not really going to make you take an oath, you can take a quasi-oath. Instead of taking a real Torah-level oath, you could say, Dor li b'chaye roshcha. Take something which is, you know, instead of an actual oath, kind of like a declaration. So Rabbi Meir says, in that situation, Isaac will always have the right to renege and say, you know what, no, I want to actually make you take a formal oath to make sure that you're telling the truth. So yachalachzerbo, you can retract. V'chachamim omrim, no, as the Chachamim said before, once you accept it, even though you had rights that you could have asserted, once you've waived those rights, so to speak, eno yachalachzerbo, one can no longer renege. Okay, so we talked about before people who were formally invalidated, either because they were relatives, as we just spoke about, the case of accepting one's father or the other litigant's father as a judge, or psulin, people who are invalidated to serve as judges, and kal v'chomer, people who are invalidated to serve as witnesses, and kal v'chomer, they're not allowed to serve as judges. So the first case here in the Mishnah is a case that you could talk a lot about philosophically speaking, and my teacher of Lichtenstein Zatzal certainly did very often. The first case of one who's invalidated is a misachik bekuvia, somebody who gambles around. So there's two opinions in the Gemara. What's the problem with this gambler? Why is he invalid to give testimony in a halachic setting? Why is he invalid to serve as a judge? So one opinion in the Gemara is that gambling is really like a form of stealing, because everybody goes to a casino and nobody really thinks that they're going to lose. Okay, so if you make your money off of gambling, so that's kind of like a rabbinic version of theft. And anybody who's involved in any kind of theft is automatically invalidated to serve as a witness or a judge. The other broad category of invalidation is somebody who violates a law of sheyesh bo malchus, any Torah-level prohibition that's subject to lashes, because the Torah says, v'haya im bin hakos harasha. It calls that person a rasha, and in the context of the laws of testimony in Parshas Mishpatim, the Torah says, al tashas yadcha im rasha, lios eid chamas, that a rasha can't serve as an aid. So a rasha is either somebody for purposes of testimony who's violated a Torah-level prohibition that's associated with lashes, or anybody who's involved in any kind of theft, even if it's theft on rabbinic level. So one position with respect to the person who's involved in gambling is that this person is a rabbinic version of a thief. The other approach, which is actually very philosophical in nature, is that even if he's not a thief, he's considered to be an undesirable, perhaps even wicked individual, because he's not involved in yeshuvo shel olam. He doesn't do something productive with his time. The Rambam says doing something productive means studying Torah or somehow working in a job that involves, you know, moving the world forward. Whatever your job is, it's going to be necessary for practical purposes. Rabbi Avadya Bar Tanur adds in doing milos chasadim is also a very important thing to do. So the Bar Tanur adds a third category. A person who sits around all day gambling, so this person can't be trusted because, you know, he's an unproductive member of society, which is very fascinating expansion of the psul edus and psul dayanus. Certainly hamalver beribis, somebody who's involved in the financial crime because he loans out at interest, or even somebody who pays at interest, both are prohibited. A Jewish person is not allowed to charge interest to a fellow Jew. Jewish person is not allowed to pay interest to a fellow Jew. Mafriche yonim, this is a little bit of a difficult case to define. Mafriche yonim, either somebody who's able to train a dove to cause other doves to come to one's home, and
Therefore, it's again a kind of a theft, or people who used to race doves against each other, which would sort of be similar to the first category of Misachik Bekovia, defined it as some kind of a gambling. V'sochare Shavias. The Torah says, V'haya Shabbas Aretz Lachem La'ochla, that you're supposed to eat the fruits of Shavias, but you're not allowed to do commercial activities with fruits that grow in the seventh year. So somebody who would be involved in selling that kind of produce would also be invalidated to serve as a judge or as a witness. So Amar Rabbi Shimon, B'tchila Hayukorin Osan Osve Shavias. Even per people who weren't involved in transacting and commercializing fruit that grows during the seventh year. However, Misharabu Ha'anasim, when the Jewish people came under persecution and foreign entities forced them to turn over large quantities of produce even during the seventh year, so there were many people who were afraid. They were afraid for their families, they were afraid for their livelihood, so they became involved in these activities. So Chazer Lechrosan Sochre Shvias. The only people who were going to be invalidated from giving testimony or serving as judges were people who were involved in making profit, as opposed to people who were just afraid of suffering at the hands of foreign oppressors. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says, and it's a little bit of a difficult clause, and the different commentaries struggle, say, which clause is he talking about? Is he talking about those who commercialize the fruit of the seventh year, or is he talking about the first section of the Mishnah, when the Mishnah was talking about Misachik Bekovia? So that's the approach of Bar Tanura. It's a little bit simpler to read that way, so we'll follow that approach for tonight's purposes. Say, hey, Masai, when is somebody who's a gambler invalidated from giving testimony? Bizman she'en lehem umnos elohi, when they have no other job. Aval yesh lehem umnos shelohi, but if they have some other job, let's say they're a doctor by day and they like to gamble at night, so you can't say they're unproductive member of society. They're just unproductive when they're gambling. Maybe they shouldn't be involved in gambling. They're not considered an unproductive member of society overall. Ksheirin, they would be allowed to serve as judges, and they would be allowed to serve as witnesses as well. So that seems to militate in the direction that the only problem with the Misachik Bekovia was Eino Osek B'Yeshiva Shel Olam, as opposed to saying that he's some kind of a goslin on a rabbinic level. So just to review, we learned two very important concepts today. That even though in Halacha, somebody who's relative or somebody who's apostle, what we define as somebody who's involved in any kind of financial impropriety, or he's violated the law of Sheish B'Malkos, is invalidated from participating in a Din Torah, one can say, by mutual consent with the other litigant, that we accept a relative to serve as the judge in this case. And once you accept by mutual consent somebody who would otherwise be invalidated, we had a dispute between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, how long can one back out? Rabbi Meir basically rules that one can continue to back out even after the verdict is given. The Chachamim say once the verdict is given, or once a kinyan has been taken, one can no longer renege, and we saw a parallel issue there with Shavua. And then the Mishnah wanted to define again what would render somebody invalid for halachic purposes from serving as a witness or as a judge. And we said there are two broad categories, and we gave subcategories. The two broad categories is anybody who's involved in any kind of financial impropriety is immediately invalidated from serving as a judge or as a witness, and anybody who's violated any Torah level prohibition that's associated with Malkos, with the penalty of lashes, is also invalidated based on the principle that the Torah refers to somebody who's Chayav Malkos as a Rasha, V'hayayin bin Hakosa Rasha, and the Torah says, Al Tashas Yadcha im Rasha, Lios Eid Hamas, that you shall not be party to kind of corrupt testimony involving a Rasha. So the halacha is, and this is a part of the idea of tshuva in Jewish law, that once somebody who's chayav malkos actually receives malkos, so then he, we assume, as the pasuk says, v'nikla achicha leinecha, that he is rendered a full and a member of the Jewish people, the Jewish community, in good standing, and from that point on he would be eligible to give testimony. The slate would be wiped clean after Malkos had actually been administered. Rabbi Hanan ben Akash,